hope you remember the message that she gave all of us here today. My name is Joel Brand. I am the area director in Eagan for a Christian nonprofit called Treehouse. And I'll give you a little bit of context for our ministry there so that I can then fold that in to the story, my story that I get to tell as a part of your summer series of telling stories. Then we'll tie that into Daniel 3 as well and have a little bit of a question for you to leave this place, this space with, where you can reflect on your story as well. So Treehouse is an organization that works with teens. Our mission is to end teen hopelessness. And it started by a man named Fred Peterson in 1984. He was a Minneapolis school teacher that had students showing up in his classroom either high or drunk, and his heart was heavy with the heaviness that they were feeling. And so he went to his principal and tried to find solutions for these kids. And unfortunately, the response of the principal was that of the system that was in place for them to be suspended, and the problems kept getting worse. And Fred wanted to create a system where those problems could get better. And he started Treehouse that has expanded not only from Minneapolis and Minnesota, but nationwide as well. And so we focus at Treehouse not on necessarily a behavior modification, but a belief modification that then has behavior modifications come from it. So we tell our teens that they are lovable and they are capable and they're worthwhile. And as those beliefs become healthier and more stable, the behaviors that often can derail any of us start to crumble, and that they could see that they are created by a loving God who has sustained so many things that all of us can be in praise for and thankfulness to our God. And so I am here because of my connection to both Pastor Chris and Pastor Anna. I worked with Pastor Chris last year at Excelsior Covenant, and that church actually houses one of the Treehouse sites, and I got to know and work with Treehouse there in my year as interim at Excelsior for their senior high youth. And it's been an honor to be able to walk with her, and I'm so grateful that she's here in this place, as well as Pastor Anna, who I went to seminary with, to be able to have the journey of learning and then applying is such a gift with any person that you get to walk with. So thank you to both of you. I also have a connection to Pastor Tim. My grandpa was named Roger, and Tim's father was named Norbert, and they were best friends. And so I grew up at First Covenant St. Paul, where Pastor Norbert was a man that led our family. And I also am the same age as Pastor Tim's young, Peter, his son. We were chemistry partners in high school. Unfortunately, neither of us were too committed to that role, and so we barely squeaked by. But we did indeed graduate. And so I'll start to tell a little bit more context about me, but that's my context with Bloomington Covenant. This is the first morning that I've gotten to be in this beautiful sanctuary and with you wonderful people. So I'm grateful for that. And I wanted to start with a word of prayer so we can all center ourselves together. God, in this space right now, have the words that are of you be what is focused on by all of us. Let your Spirit lead each one of us individually and together corporately more to a place where our stories reflect your greater story in the small moments of our lives and in the arc of all that you are creating and redeeming and sustaining in this place. God, we love you, and have your Spirit be guiding and moving this time together. In the name of Jesus Christ we pray. Amen. So to start off with my story, I was born in 1991 in St. Paul to a family that was Joan and Dave Brand, my sister Jenna, and we attended First Covenant St. Paul. My grandparents also were members at that church, so I was the fifth generation in high school to become a member of that church as I was in the youth group and decided to commit to being a member. I was a rather quiet child. I didn't want to get in trouble. That was kind of the number one focus in my youngest ages of just kind of staying on a path that there wouldn't be any drama. So I played with action figures a lot by myself. I collected sports cards and sorted those. And I enjoyed kind of an introverted life to start off my elementary career. And then as I got older, I went to Minnehaha Academy in Minneapolis for high school. And I started off really keeping that same idea of just not wanting to be in the way or cause any problems. And I had that throughout high school until my sophomore year, where a couple things started to pivot. One was I'd been working as a custodian at First Covenant St. Paul for a couple years there. After school, I would go into work and put in a couple hours putting up the tables and taking down for Sunday school, cleaning the bathrooms and whatnot. And I did that with somebody who was an atheist. He was my age, a boy named Zach, and we would have plenty of time to talk as we were doing tasks that didn't require as much mental capacity as we needed to put to them. So we would chat about everything from deep questions of the faith to kind of what we thought this life was about. And as I was in that sphere, early high school, my grandpa Roger, who I already talked about as Norbert's friend, he passed away as well. And he, my grandpa Roger, was such an important figure in my life. Both my parents worked full-time jobs, and so I was actually brought to my grandpa Roger's house each morning, and they fed me and my sister and brought us to school. And so when my grandpa Roger, who I deeply respected, passed away, I started to have to ask the question, do I believe in what I've been doing myself? Or am I just following along with the steps that my family has taken for generations? And so as I'm thinking about that and talking to Zach, an atheist, about God, I decide that kind of sophomore year to really commit, to say, I do believe in Jesus Christ and that that's the life that I want to lead. And in that, I experienced a lot more freedom, where I wasn't necessarily as worried about how people perceived me, right? Or if I were to be getting in trouble, or if I was not to have the right thing go the way I wanted to. I had a confidence and a boldness that started to come because I realized I had a mission that Jesus was trying to lead me to. And so from that, I got involved more with Covenant Pines. I started to be a junior staff and really felt like a connection to that place and the people that were there. And I worked at Covenant Pines for 4 years, the summer during my college time, two as a counselor and two as a summer program director. I went to North Park during those years as well and had a wonderful experience. I graduated with a youth ministry degree in 2013. And so my life up until that point really was feeling like, this is awesome. This is such a gift. And I didn't really know if it was me or if it was my system and the family and all the structures that were around me that were creating all of this good momentum. And so I decided to actually start over with a blank slate where I knew no one. Not because I had problems that I was running away from, but because I actually had so much good that I wanted to see if I could recreate that in a different place. And I interned actually at Pilgrim Pines, which Pastor Anna just prayed for. I spent a year out in New Hampshire where I didn't know anybody and was intern at a camp kind of helping with whatever they needed. And so I had, again, a lot of time and space to reflect on what would be next after I graduated college with my youth ministry degree. And there's one particular story that I want to really land on today that we'll go from and talk about within the context of Daniel 3. It started on a weekend where we had a quilters group. They would come up and spend the weekend quilting, and we provided food and cleaning up their rooms. And it was all going well until I got the stomach bug, and that took me out of commission for about 24 hours. So I went back to my place, and people were checking in on me, but I was kind of down and out trying to get healthy for 24 hours. Well, by the time that I got into being able to be a normal, functioning member of society again, everyone at camp had left. There was one other intern that was with me. His name was Andrew. He actually went home for the weekend to be with his parents. And so I emerged at Pilgrim Pines from this, all the ruckus of a retreat and people and the tasks that we had to do, into complete silence. Complete quiet. No one was around. It was starting to get towards winter as well. And I didn't know what I was going to do, because no one was going to be back at camp for another 24 hours. And if you've been sick before, you know that once you're ready to start up again, you're really ready to start up again. So I had to figure out a plan. So I watched a movie, and that wasn't it. And I was like, what can I do here? I can't drive into town. I don't want to eat anything. I don't know what to do. And I had the idea to go take a bath. It was like the Disney World of my weekend right there, was to go take a bath. And camp had 65 showers, as you know, but only one bathtub. So I walked over to the cabin that had that bathtub, turned up all the heat, and thought maybe I'll get some of the congestion out, kind of steam it out. And as I was there, I really just started to think a lot about my college experience. Not because of really any particular reason, but I would say the Spirit was kind of leading me to reflect and process. And I thought about all of the positive things that I had there. And I thought about the people that had been a part of that. And one man's name was Marcus. And Marcus was a seminary intern for the university ministries, the undergrad ministries that North Park had. And so I was in a discipleship group, and Marcus was one of the leaders that kind of helped us as undergrads think about our faith and applying it. And I started to think about Marcus, and I realized that just like at Covenant Pines and at youth group, there were people that poured into me so that I could have those positive experiences growing up. Now, I really felt like I wanted to be more and more a person that would pay it forward to other younger people as I got to be able to lead in moments. And so I had already been thinking about going to seminary, and what really got me to commit to it and really got me to commit to North Park instead of a different seminary was I knew that I could have the option to be a university ministries seminary intern for the undergrad. And that experience was one of my favorites. I got to do a lot of different roles, from leading discipleship groups, which, fun fact, my wife was actually in one of those groups early on. I had to tell all of the undergrads to give me their names, and I yelled my cell phone number to about 100 undergrads and said, hey, text me if you want to be in one of the discipleship groups this year. I'm setting them all up. And my wife, Leah, took that number and wrote Joel Seminary. And about 7 years later, when I asked her out, she still had my number in her phone. It's saying Joel Seminary from that time. And so I met my wife through that. I got to be the North Park men's basketball chaplain, where I got to do a Devo chapel before each of the games and got to have one-on-one with the basketball teams and connect with them. And all of these moments that I'm so grateful for. And it all kind of started from this moment in a bathtub after I was sick, where I said, I want to be somebody like Marcus was for me to someone else. And so that moment actually sustained me through seminary for the 3 years that I was there. When times got tough, either personally or in academics, I went back to that moment and I said, hey, I feel called here to be a person that others would be able to experience God through because I was placed in a certain spot. And like this chapter here in Daniel 3, there's a lot of life lessons in our faith that we can learn. And Daniel 3, the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, which I heard first through the wonderful lens of VeggieTales and the Chocolate Bunny as well, this story has been one that I've come back to in my faith. And it's really become a rooted place for me to experience what God has for me in this world. So if you would like, I encourage you to take the pew out of the Bible out of the pew and read with me, because we'll go through Daniel 3 here together. And there'll be a spot that I particularly highlight that we'll go to afterwards. But I really value being able to read this whole context with you as well. So Daniel 3 starts off, the bold heading says, the image of gold and the blazing furnace. It starts up by saying, King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide and set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the advisors, the treasurers, judges, and magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, the prefects, the governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. All right, pause. There was a lot of nouns and a lot of people that were just said, and I hope you, in hearing all of that, understand the momentum that was behind King Nebuchadnezzar in this story. All of those people, with the power they had, are involved and behind King Nebuchadnezzar in this. All right, let's restart. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, "Nations and people of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down with worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace." Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, the lyre, the harp, and all kinds of music, all the nations and people of every language fell down and worshipped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Pause again. A lot of instruments are talked about there, and I can only imagine the noise that all of those instruments would be making if they were playing at one moment. And so in this story, think about all of the noise that Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego were probably thinking about and hearing as they were trying to make their decision on how they were going to respond to King Nebuchadnezzar's proclamation. It wasn't this simple moment where they could really think and have time to make the right decision. I imagine it felt chaotic. It felt loud. And these words help us understand what the situation they were in was. We'll restart starting at verse 8. "At this time, some astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said, 'King Nebuchadnezzar, may the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of gold. And whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into a blazing furnace. But there are some Jews who have set over the affairs that you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up." So pause. The moment of conflict is here. The astrologers have placed the dynamic that already was existing, that King Nebuchadnezzar wanted to be worshipped by everyone, and he wasn't. And now we get to experience and hear how that conflict plays out. Starting again in verse 13. "Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, so these men were brought before the king. And Nebuchadnezzar said to them, 'Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a blazing furnace. Then, what God will be able to rescue you from my hand?'" Nebuchadnezzar is saying, "I got all of these people behind me. I got all of this noise around you. I'm going to call your bluff. Are you going to not worship me?" This is the part I want us to really focus in on right here. Chapter 3, verse 16. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, 'King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But if he does not, but even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up.'" Those couple verses we'll come back to because they're so powerful. Verse 19 says, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual and commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes and trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent, and the furnace was so hot, that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing furnace." So this is the moment. The soldiers had as much equipment on as possible to protect them. It wasn't enough. King Nebuchadnezzar's power was so great in this moment. And the 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, said, "We will not worship another god." Starting back in verse 24, "Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisor, 'Weren't there 3 men that were tied up and thrown into the fire?' They replied, 'Certainly, Your Majesty.' He said, 'Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods.' Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here.' So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was a hair of their heads singed. Their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. Then Nebuchadnezzar said, 'Praise be to God, to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent His angel and rescued His servants. They trusted Him, and they defied the king's command and were willingly able to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who had said anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that they would be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way.' Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon." This is the word of the Lord. So there's many points that the Spirit could be talking to you about for you to reflect on. And Jess gave us such a good one that sometimes it's okay to be the one that's not like the others and to be confident and to be bold in that because God can move powerfully. There might be a thought in your mind that you'd say, "I really need to believe in a miracle because there's a lot in my life that feels really challenging right now. And I want to have the faith in God to trust no matter what I might be walking into, whether it's a tough relationship, whether it's a tough situation at work, whether it's a burning fiery furnace like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Maybe God's trying to talk to you about that faith that you would need in the next steps that you'll be taking." When I read this passage, the part that sticks out the most to me is, as I highlighted earlier, it's the response that Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego have to King Nebuchadnezzar. Let's read it one more time from verse 16. "King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and He will deliver us from Your Majesty's hand. But even if He does not, we want you to know, Your Majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." So, seminary taught me a lot. It's taught all of us pastors a lot. And sometimes it's hard to know how to apply the Hebrew language that we learn and to read the Old Testament, or the Greek and the New Testament, those classes we had in seminary. How do we apply that to our lives as we're walking in a restaurant and interacting with a waiter? Or how do we apply that when somebody cuts us off in traffic? How do we apply the lessons of pastoral care from church history to covenant history that they teach us in seminary? There's so much information that we have, that all of us have about God, as you've listened to sermons before, as you've read texts and scriptures. Sometimes it feels like my faith is a lot of that lyre and the harp and the pipe and the flute, and it's all of the noise. And I need to simplify it. And I need to have something I can go back to. Just like in seminary, when I went back to that story of saying, I want to be a Marcus to someone else, to be somebody that was a positive influence and pay it forward, that sustained me. This verse right here, Daniel 3:16-18, has sustained me. That I say, God, I'm walking with a teen right now that's going through a lot, and I truthfully don't know what the outcome's going to be. It might feel like I can see a clear way that you're moving and that we can rejoice in celebration because there's an ideal outcome for this person. And if that's the case, God, I'm ready to celebrate. But even if not, even if it's a really dark season that feels more like winter, I'm not going to change the path that you've put me on. I'm going to stay the course, God, because I believe in you. I believe you're mighty to save, just like the song that we're about to sing. I believe that you are a great God, like the song that we said. And I really believe that it is sweet to trust in Jesus, because trying to trust in myself, that's always gotten me nowhere. Trying to trust in something of the world is just as hollow. It's a black hole that never will have an ending like Jesus Christ had on the cross. And so with this, I hope that your story that's continually being written out now, that you could find a Bible passage, a text, a scripture that you can go back to when times feel challenging. I hope you can find a story in your life, a moment where you knew God was real, and you can remember that, put back into memory those moments, because that's what I think can sustain us through the challenges. And so for me, this passage, Daniel 3:16-18, is that. And as we sing and as we go forward today, I hope you can reflect in your life what those Bible passages and stories are. As you continue this sermon series in the summer about other people's stories, I hope you think about, what would the story I would tell if I was given a moment to preach here? What's the passage, the Bible story I would want to preach on? Because there's a passion in me about what God has done through that story in my life. I hope you can find that, because it's so rich and it's so wonderful. Thanks be to God.